Hey, everyone. Before we get into this week's episode, I just wanted to give a friendly reminder that if you haven't already, it would be absolutely huge for us if you could leave a rating of the show and a review of the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And with that said, we'll jump into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of The Mac Rumors Show. I am Dan. We have Hartley here as usual. Hartley, good afternoon. How is life treating you this week? Any different than last week?
Well, I'm getting over the fact that we're not getting the iPads yet. I'm getting over it.
You know what? We should keep doing this little bit every time, even past once the iPads are announced. Because it's like, well, we got new iPads, but now I want new iPads, and I'm just sad that those haven't been announced yet. Just keep it going. Keep rolling.
It's never ending. The rumor mill never ends, and in the case of these iPads, it particularly never ends.
How quickly we move on to, it's like, iPhone 15, this is great, and then a week later, it's like, yeah, forget iPhone 15.
Yeah.
I've got iPhone 16 rumors for you. And I'm like, man, I just spent an entire year talking about this one. At least let me enjoy it. Like, come on.
The one that always gets me is directly before a new device comes out and we get the rumors about the device after that. And the comments are always furiously angry about that. Like last year, just before the iPhone 15 came out, there was a bunch of stuff about the iPhone 17. and people just have no patience for it. But what are we going to do? We've got to put this stuff out there. And some people don't upgrade to the new thing. Maybe they do have a two-year upgrade cycle and it makes them feel a little bit better about that new thing that is coming out. So there's always two sides to it.
I'm gonna be honest, I'm one of those people who gets very angry about the 27 or the 17 rumors. I'm just like, no, I don't want to hear it. I don't care. Well, that's a great segue into a rumor that I was absolutely not expecting. I think this was yesterday, Wednesday, April 3rd. We got a okay, so I don't know if you're familiar with this. In the U.S., when it comes to sports, we have very prominent, like, they're not beat reporters, but they're just, like, insiders. That's what they're called. So, like, for the NFL, we have NFL insiders. And there's, like, one or two guys that get all of the leaks. They're, like, the Mac Rumors of football. And then there's one for basketball. And they know all of the inside information. And so when they drop it, it's called, like, the guy's name's Adam Schefter, so it's a Schefter bomb. And then there's Adrian Wojnarowski, and it's a Woj bomb whenever he drops these news. So I'm going to start doing that for Mark Gurman. He'll appreciate this because he's a pretty big sports fan too. So we're going to call it a Gurman bomb that was dropped yesterday. I don't know if it's really a bomb, but Apple's exploring mobile robots that follow users around their homes. What do you think about that? Would you like a little robot following around your house?
Instinctively, I'm going to say no. But that's mainly because I don't really know what that would do for me.
It could do whatever you want, I guess.
I don't get it. It's like the image that we used in our article about this is Amazon's Astro. And I don't get that. I don't know if you've checked it out at CES or anything in the past and could provide a little bit more clarity on what these sort of experiences are like.
So I've seen, I mean, I can say that I have seen a bunch of these. There's different forms too. So there, I have seen the Astro briefly. Samsung had like a dog that would follow you around or some sort of like rolling ball. Actually, it was like a ball. The dog is Sony, I know for a fact. And maybe Samsung might have a dog too, but Sony kind of famously has this dog that everybody likes that follows you around. It's just like legitimately a robotic dog. That one I might understand if you're somebody who lives alone and maybe you don't want the real responsibilities of a dog, but like you like the idea of getting attention from an animal and like taking care of. I don't know. Maybe you can't. Maybe you're allergic to dogs, but like you think dogs are cute. And so this robotic dog is something that you need. I really don't know. And then there's like these like serviceable robots. Like I've seen, so I'm in a bowling league, fun fact for those of you out there. And at our bowling alley, they have a robot, like a service robot that brings you your food that you might order from like the snack bar or whatever. Interesting. Necessary? No, but useful. It has like a use case. Could you do that with these like home robots? Like basically make it your personal butler, like, hey, go get me this out of the fridge, or like, I guess in here we have it saying that it would kind of like help you do the dishes, handle chores, clean the dishes in the sink is what the quote was from German. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
If it is capable of doing that, then that cool. is very useful and yeah. very impressive. But
right.
the real question there is if. And Mark added to the end of this report and said that it could be a decade away because just the engineering sure. challenges involved in that are massive.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's so difficult to talk about a rumor like this. Sometimes, you know, in the past, it's been hard to talk about things like what it will be like with Apple glasses or Apple contact lenses in the future, yeah. what it will be like with an Apple vehicle. But I feel like this is really pushing us beyond the pale of how could we talk about how this would be priced or how it charges, or it's so beyond the sort of realms of what we're used to discussing. I feel like this is a really difficult one to weigh up because sure, I quite like the idea of someone else doing the dishes for me, doing the dishes for me or cooking for me or whatever that may be. But how, yeah. how viable even is that? Is that a discussion even worth having?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be pessimistic because, like, I am a lover of tech and cool gadgets, even things that are remotely just not necessary. Like, sometimes I'm like, yeah, but it's cool. So, like, whatever. And you're right, dude. The idea of something else that's not me or my wife, you know, doing the chores that we don't want to do is amazing. People in the past, including my father, would ultimately say, that's why we had you kids, to do all of the stuff that we didn't want to do. So, you know, maybe nowadays that's not the right thing to go about it. So now we just got to build robots instead. I will say I constantly trip over like my dog that follows me around, and sometimes my own kids follow me around. The thought of like a robot just like rolling behind me at all times and then I like turn around and freaking fall over it, just, you know, like how much of the way in the way is that going to be? Now, is it like a legitimate human sized robot as well? Like, to be able to do the dishes, it's going to have to be.
It would have to be. I mean, that's also yeah. the question. Is this is Apple imagining some kind of humanoid thing here long term?
Yeah.
If so, that's even more bizarre perhaps, but I sort of think it has to be, because if it is one of these devices that just rolls around on the floor and follows you around, I don't get that personally. I don't understand how that's useful, because it's effectively just a voice assistant that can show me stuff, which I can do anyway.
Well, have you seen the Tesla bots? They're like,
yes.
That's what I'm envisioning.
Yeah. So that is a humanoid robot, but it's, The machine learning that is necessary and the sort of dexterity involved to be able to do something like that is massive, which is why in so many factories, and when it comes to a lot of manual labor jobs, it's just mm-hmm. not viable to replace them with robotics, because ultimately a person can operate a screwdriver way better than a machine. Or just with fine sort of motor tasks. Maybe a screwdriver isn't the best example, but you know what I mean? With sort of basic wiring or things that involve things that involve using your hands and fine motor skills and identifying things, or having just those sort of fine identifiable skills, which is why I guess full self-driving has never really got off the ground. We can debate about whether that's on the case on massive American highways, but let me tell you, around some of the sort of country lanes where I live, you're never going to get full self-driving there, not for 20, 30, 50 years, just because a robot is not going to be able to comprehend the sort of decision-making necessary for that. And I feel like something like doing the dishes, how much pressure you apply, because different dishes are made of different materials. Some are thicker than others. Some can be washed and can't be washed in different ways. There's so much decision-making involved. I can't see it for the time being. And I think that the interesting thing here is, obviously this is a kind of moonshot idea. This is how it's being phrased for Apple. But I just sort of wonder why. How much faith do they have in this long term? If they couldn't make a car work, how are they going to be able to do this? This almost feels like a bigger challenge than a car. It's certainly more out there than a car.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a bigger challenge than a car, because like there's got to be way less laws and regulations that they have to worry about when it comes to making a robot that will follow you around.
Regulation, yes, but in terms of the actual AI capabilities and actual robotics,
well, that's terrifying. Yeah,
it's a completely different question, and I suppose Apple is looking at a lot of this work on AI that they've done on the Apple Car, and is now sort of redistributing some of that to this sort of thinking. And one of the little points actually that I do think is interesting, and I wonder if we are going to get a little hint of this sort of technology a little bit sooner, was do you remember the reports about the HomePod on a robotic arm, or rather a HomePod with a robotic arm that holds a screen?
Mm-hmm.
And that would kind of follow you around a room or present information to you. And at the time, mm-hmm. I thought, I'm not sure I really understand how useful that is per se, as opposed to just something that rotates. Mm-hmm. But one of the little mentions in this report is that Apple has researched that in terms of the robotic arm mirroring the movements of a person on a FaceTime call. So it will kind of add a natural movement to the FaceTime calls because the screen itself would move. So if the person on the screen moves their head to the side, the screen will also move to the side in the same way for the person at the receiving end.
I don't know if I need that.
I don't know if I need it, but it's an interesting idea. And I wonder, considering that we heard that report, maybe it was 2 years ago. I don't really remember the exact time frame for that. I wonder if we're going to see Apple venturing into robotics on in a slightly smaller way a little bit sooner with something like that. So that will be interesting to see.
I gotta say, like, Apple probably is working on tons of random out there weird stuff that we could not possibly imagine on a regular basis, but we just don't know about them. But like, why is this one particularly leaking out there when there's probably something even more outlandish that they're working on that we have no idea? It's just, it's funny, like, the things that get leaked. Is it because this is closer to reality? Or
I think what it is, it's because it has to come hand in hand with a reevaluation of priorities at Apple. And I think there's two things. It's the Apple Car, because they've got all of these staff that were working on that. And that obviously did involve, I don't know whether you would call it robotics, but certainly it was a more mechanical
engineering
device.
Yeah, mechanical engineering for sure.
And also a lot of artificial intelligence to be able to build self-driving capabilities. And of course, the other element is the renewed push for AI that we're expecting this year with WWDC. And going forward, we're only expecting that to ramp up. It's a bit like Apple using Gemini, as we expect, to base a lot of its AI features on this year. But we also know they are working on their own large language models, ultimately. So that is something for later down the line. And overall, that's quite a shift in what Apple has been working on. If we go back 2 years, we were thinking long-term Apple's working on Apple Car, and it's working on mixed reality. The conversation is now changing a little bit to be a little bit more AI focused, and Vision Pro is out there now, and that will be iterated on over time. So I think that's possibly why this has happened and we have got this report, because it has to come in line with more of a conscious push in this direction rather than just neat projects. But that HomePod tidbit does stand out to me, because that is something that we've heard before. So I'm inclined to think maybe that is now something that we will actually see sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, we've always, you know, I've been wanting the whole HomePod with the display for a while, and that has to be pretty close, right? So if that is like another version of that, to where it like would have a different, you know, use case, like you said, for mimicking, making it more natural, does this have anything to do with like spatial personas that we were working, you know, that we were talking about recently? Is that like an implementation of that, trying to make it feel more natural? Maybe when that, you know, like you said, when they're moving around and the screen, I mean, there's plenty of things there, but like, I don't know, not all of this is as necessary as like some other things that they could be doing. But, you know, we obviously, they have a million employees. I'm exaggerating, but they have a ton of employees, so they can't all be working on iPhones and Macs. They've got
to
spread it out.
Push things forwards, right? So if they've been working on Vision Pro for about a decade, as much as Vision Pro can be iterated on, the product's out there now, the platform's out there. And so in much the same way that the iPhone is iterated on every year, Vision Pro, if not every year, will now be iterated on generation over generation until it becomes a really mature product, like the iPad or the Apple Watch or whatever it may be. But Apple has to keep pushing that forward. And if the car is not that next big thing, then they have to start looking in other areas. And I understand that. So in a way, it makes sense to me. But also, I think it's just because it's so at its infancy. And I wonder, maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, when we've had some more reports like this, maybe we'll have a clearer shape of how this is going to pan out. Because I feel like with Vision Pro, we had a fairly good idea of how that would be priced, what the experience would be like at least 2 years before launch, probably even about 4 years before we had a fairly good idea of how that would work and how glasses was the long-term ambition. And we could see all this stuff coming with spatial audio and with the big push toward AR and putting LiDAR scanners on devices. We could see it coming. So maybe as time goes on, we will get a better sense of how robotics at Apple is going to take shape, if indeed this is the big thing. Maybe this is just Apple executives panicking and wondering if this should be. And that's where this report is coming from. But give it a year. Let's see. I want to see some more reports about this at this point, I think, before I sink too much extra thought into this. Because at the moment, it is a little bit baffling.
You know, maybe this will be a good time for me to check out Amazon's Astro Robot. So anyone at Amazon listening, if you want to send me one, I will make it roll around and follow me and let you know if this is useful. I actually don't even remember what it does for you. Is it just like a companion thing? Can it go get you things?
I don't think it can get you things, but I think you can store things in it. So it can kind of carry stuff around for you, like if you have a backpack or whatever. And I think that it can show, obviously it works like an Echo Show.
Right, because of the display.
Yeah, so you can field inquiries, but also it's just always there. So unlike an Echo Show that has to be on a surface, and if you're not in that room, if you're not right next to that thing, it's not particularly useful. But I don't know, if you're cleaning your bathroom, your Amazon Astro has followed you in there, and you can ask to see something, and it will show you.
Could be useful. Hey, Astro, I'm on the toilet. Show me a good video. I don't know.
I mean, I guess it also has some security features. So if it can roam around your home when you're not there, you can access that camera.
Oh, that's right. That was one of like the major selling points. You know, but it is like a camera that Amazon has information to, and it's constantly following you. We don't need to lead down that whole thing. But I've also just been kind of the guy who's, not that I don't care about privacy and security. I do, and I try to take the measures that I need to. But I am of the nature that if someone really wanted to get information about me in some way, shape, or form that is from these companies, they either have it already or they can easily get it, and I wouldn't know. So why spend time worrying about it is my opinion. Okay, so yeah, let us know what you guys think about a potential Apple robot following you around your house and maybe doing all of the chores that you don't want to do. iOS 17.5, huge update. Massive. Loaded with new features. Beta 1 was just out on, was it Monday or Tuesday? Monday, somewhere around there. I'm being sarcastic if it's not a very big update. But there are some interesting things that we did find that kind of allude to other areas that are intriguing. Like, let's start with the one that I didn't realize until after I made my video on it. But apparently Apple is referencing in code, right? The Apple Pencil with USB-C is considered Apple Pencil 3 to them. Is that correct?
Yes, although we knew that before.
Didn't know that before.
It's because the way that Apple has put this in code is that it's seen as versions. So the first generation Apple Pencil is version 1. The second generation is version 2. The USB-C version is version 3. And then
sure, but do they call that third gen, though? Because
it third gen. They call it the third version. And that is
why... Okay, well, then I did know that. I wanted to make sure they weren't like now referencing this as third generation.
Right. Or at least that's my understanding of it. But the interesting thing here is that they are referring to a fourth version.
Yeah.
So this is presumably the upcoming Apple Pencil, which I guess we would refer to as the third generation Apple Pencil.
Right. So that's the confusing nature of all of this. Basically, the biggest thing out of that is that we saw Apple Pencil 4, which is the fourth version, which gives us confirmation that a new one is coming, per se. But it's not going to be called Apple Pencil 4. It would be called Apple Pencil 3, in our guess, maybe? I don't really know.
I mean, I actually have a theory that this is going to be an Apple Pencil Pro.
Yes. Well, that's good. That's what it should be.
And I think that might make things a little bit clearer. So I think in the lineup, you possibly will have Apple Pencil, just Apple Pencil with USB-C, and then you will have Apple Pencil Pro. And I think that would make all of this numbering way clearer.
Totally fine.
And I totally also fine. Think that both models will feature a USB-C port. So you will get inductive charging as an option, but you will also get the ability to charge with a wire, because the key thing that gives that away, in my opinion, is we are expecting some VisionOS support for this next generation Apple Pencil. But let's say you don't have an iPad and you only have a Vision Pro, then how are you going to charge your Apple Pencil? So it has to have some other method of charging. And I also just think it would make things way clearer in the lineup. So if you have that entry-level iPad, but you want to use the Apple Pencil Pro, then you can, because you don't have to use the inductive charger. So I think to me, it makes sense that you have multiple methods of charging. And the other thing that suggests to me that this is a more pro Apple Pencil is we're also expecting a new gesture, which is a sort of squeezing gesture. So at the moment, you can double tap the Apple Pencil to switch to, say, an eraser. But it looks like you will also have an additional gesture. So if you squeeze hard, a little bit like on the stem of AirPods, then you're also going to unlock some additional functionality. I suppose you could map that to whatever you wanted it to be.
Let's go back to this Apple Pencil on Apple Vision Pro for a second, because I don't think we've ever talked about this. What are, for those who might not know, what is the input method for that? Is it going to be taking the pencil and doing this motion up in the air? Or is it some sort of surface thing that we can do to where we have physical feedback, whether it be from whatever writing surface you're on? You know, back in the day, we've talked about this before. There was the whole trackpad. Writing on a trackpad for your Mac would potentially make the Apple Pencil compatible. Obviously, that didn't happen, but I like that idea. How would that work for Apple Vision Pro then?
I think it's probably most likely to work on any surface. And then what you Good. See in the headset is sort of mapped onto that surface. Because I think it would be difficult to do things just in the air, because it simply won't be flat. If it can work in the air, that would be even more impressive. But it would probably have to work in a 3D environment. And I wonder if possibly that might be useful. So maybe if it's got this squeeze gesture, you have to squeeze it, and then you can kind of draw in 3D space. Otherwise,
the only times that would be useful are for
pressure?
Like, yeah, the only times that that would be useful would be like in freeform per se, you're doing a collaborative thing and you're trying to circle shit on like a document. Like, then that's fine. That makes sense. But like, any other use case for that, like actually handwriting notes or trying to navigate throughout, that would be horrible.
I think it would be good for 3D. So if you're an architect and you work in 3D design and you want to kind of move around your model, and maybe you want to move stuff around, but you don't want to use a pinching gesture and your eyes, the ability to have an Apple Pencil that you can squeeze the pencil and then kind of move stuff around or draw something new, draw a new shape, and it appears as a new block in 3D space, that's interesting. If
that
it's able
be...
to do that, that is making Vision Pro much more useful to professional workflows that do use 3D modeling.
That could be a huge game changer for them. Imagine being able to, you know, you could do this now. You get on a tablet of some sort, you draw out your model, okay, and then it goes to your computer and you mess around with it that way. But being able to draw it out and then send it, well, it's already on your Vision Pro, and being able to, like, manipulate it then in the space around you, that's insane. That would be... Yeah, you're right. I mean, I would never use that probably, but it'd be great for those who do, because that would change their entire workflow. And I don't think the Apple Pencil would do anything for me in terms of like making my life better, but it would certainly be more useful, in my opinion, for like navigating throughout the UI, or just at the very least, like, I would much rather, if it can do a really good job of like translating like how it does now on your iPad, where it takes your written text to just plain text on the screen, that would be great. Like, because typing is not great if you don't have a keyboard. So if that's another thing, like, oh, I just got to carry this pencil around, I could do it on any surface. And if I'm writing out a message, I could just literally handwrite it and then hit send. That would be so much better than trying to type like this or carry a keyboard around. Yeah. Like, imagine being on a plane and being like, well, I just want to write this out real quick. I'm taking notes or something. Just do it on the tray, write it out, boom. And it translates it to regular text for you, or transcribes it, whatever.
And if that pencil is tracked in 3D space, it could be used for other things. I even wonder if it could be used for gaming or for anything else, if you can use it just for a different kind of hand tracking that is more precise, it could definitely open up a lot of avenues and be that sort of quote unquote controller. Even if Apple is not going to call it that, it's definitely another input mechanism, which I really think Vision Pro is probably in need of. And I think Apple Pencil is probably a pretty good fit for that, because it kind of moves away from this direction that we've seen from Meta and from other companies, where you have that large sort of like gaming style control that isn't very attractive. Whereas I can completely see Apple just liking the idea that you just put the Apple Pencil in your pocket. It's very small, it's convenient, and it goes in a different direction.
Real quick, before we get back to the 17.5 stuff, while we're on the topic of Vision Pro, what do you think of the new personas, the spatial personas? Do you think it makes it less creepy or more creepy because people can get up and walk around in your space?
I don't know if it's fair for me to call it creepy, because I do think that they are very uncanny valley. However, when I saw this, I do think it's just extremely cool. I think it is incredibly impressive. And personas were impressive to begin with, but I feel like this one has sort of bowled me over with the hand tracking and the way that you kind of emerge. You're no longer confined to a frame. And it gives me much more of a glimpse of where this could be, because if I'm imagining maybe 5 years from now, when personas look completely convincing and they don't have that uncanny look to them, and you can then interact with Keynote slides or a PDF or something, and you can point to something in 3D space and the person you're on a FaceTime call can see that, and it actually looks like you are in 3D space with that thing, that's really interesting to me. I like the idea of it. It's just, I want to just forget about the fact that it looks kind of creepy right now, because I know that they'll get there eventually.
Back to iOS 17.5 though, what are your thoughts on, I mean, the EU stuff we talked about quite a bit, so I don't really have a whole lot to say, but one of the biggest things is, for those in the EU, 17.5 does give you the ability to download apps directly from developers' websites, but there are still like a lot of hoops that the developers need to go through to make sure that it still kind of qualifies, correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of criteria to preserve security, because otherwise you could be downloading apps from any website with no sort of security. So Apple still has to notarize the apps, and developers still have to meet a certain threshold of downloads in a previous year and a lot of things like that. And this is to really meet those requirements of companies like Spotify that complained to the EU and said that ultimately they want their app to be downloaded directly from their website. They don't want to have an app store listing. They want you to go to Spotify.com and see a little drop down that says download our app, and then you download it straight from Safari. And that will now be possible. It's going to be a lot more like downloading Mac apps for iOS, but it still seems to be a pretty secure system that Apple has put in place, somewhat reluctantly. Just be very interesting to see if Apple is forced to roll this out to other jurisdictions long term because of just how much antitrust scrutiny there and now is in so many countries around the world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have, like, ultimately it would be, I mean, we could go in on our Macs and download bunch of apps and put in whatever you want from a website. Like, ultimately I wouldn't mind if that was the case on your phone, but you know,
you,
again, there are a lot of
in the same way that I wouldn't mind, but I think the concern is that would say your parents would that be an issue for your parents? Like, if you were saying them downloading like random apps from websites and you were saying, well, I'm not sure you should be doing that. So it's not so much an issue for I think that's what a lot of people in the tech community have to remember is,
yeah,
I know I can trust myself to sideload apps, but I understand Apple's objection because the vast majority of people who have an iPhone are probably going to not be quite as cautious as perhaps people in the tech community may be.
Well, then that's where it should be something that we should be allowed to enable. Like, for those who are more, like, my parents aren't going to know that it's an option and won't go seek it out and won't go through the necessary hoops to be able to do that. So make it a developer option somewhere hidden in settings that, like, only those who really want to and can seek it out and know the risks involved in doing that would be able to then turn it on. So, you know, then that eliminates, in my opinion, a vast majority of the people like my parents who would never go and seek and turn it on. Now, are there phishing capabilities out there where, like, people be like, just turn this on and then download this app and you'll be able to do? Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I just feel like it's at that point you got to be responsible for your own actions. There are consequences for that. It shouldn't ruin.
I think that's a really sensible solution. Regulators don't see it that way. I think Apple would be pretty happy with that result as well. You know, if you had to go through 5 warnings that said, are you sure you want to turn this on? Are you really sure you want to turn this on? Then fine.
Well, yeah, like you know, a big thing in the Android world, back then when I was getting all the devices on a regular basis. By the way, there was a time in my life, people, where I was full Android for a daily driver, and I would just change phones every 3 months because there was always a new Android phone coming out. But yeah, I mean, the first thing I would do is go into settings, and then in under build number, like deep into the software part of the settings, if you tap build number like 10 times or whatever the amount is, you'll start to see a thing that says, you know, 5 more taps and you're going to unlock developer options, 4 more, 3 more, 2 more, until you do it. And then developer options open. And it's a whole new settings menu that wasn't there unless you knew the little Easter egg that was to go in and tap on build option or build number a bunch of times. It's like, do that. Just hide it in a way where only people who are like us per se would know that that's there and would want to even go in there, because then you had more control over, like, the animation. That was the biggest thing. It was, I only went in there and changed the animation time, like how long the apps would open. Like, I would go from like 1x to 0.5, so it just felt snappier and just got rid of all that unnecessary animation stuff when you're scrolling through and things like that. And I still do that to this day because they're still very slow. And I feel like a lot of people would want to do that for the iPhone. And just like little things like that. Give us the ability. If we ruin our device, that's on us. Like, we were the ones who sought it out. So we have to bear the necessary consequences. But you're right. Regulators aren't going to think that way. So we'll be downloading apps here in the US at least for a long while in the App Store. And only the App Store.
Well, I don't know. I think the way things are going, I wouldn't be surprised if that has to change in the next couple of years.
Maybe, but I'm not gonna hold out hope. Anyways, the biggest thing in 17.5 beta, in my opinion, is the color changing podcast widget.
Really?
No, but I mean, it was the only like visually new feature. Yeah. And you use Apple Podcasts. I would have never have discovered this because I don't use Apple Podcasts, so I wouldn't have noticed that. Although I really like Apple Podcasts way more than Spotify. The only thing that makes it good is that it's all in one app. It's my music and my podcast are all in one. But like the elements behind it, it's funny. I like that it's all in one for the convenience of like where I listen to podcasts is it's in my car and it's just all right there. But like the reason why I like Apple Podcasts is because it's its own app that lets you find, like, you know, discover shows a little bit better. It's only that. There aren't books. There aren't, you know, music kind of getting in the way. So basically, I feel really dumb for saying I like Apple Podcasts or Spotify because it's got all the things in one place. But I really like Apple Podcasts because it separates it. Like, how contradicting of me. But, you know, maybe someone out there will
different.
Be like, yes. Yeah.
Some different, but personally,
and I just think the UI is better
Apple's
personally.
Approach.
Yeah,
I think that having them as separate apps allows you to specialize them. Apple can definitely do more of that. If anything, they're still a little bit too similar. But we've seen things with like podcast transcripts and even the ability to do things that has obviously been in the app for years, like certain functions, such as the ability to create a station with certain conditions. Or to change the speed of a podcast. Those things are not relevant to music. So they do kind of need to be separate apps in my mind, because I know perfectly well whether I want to listen to a podcast, and I'm quite happy to go into the podcast app, and whether I want to go to music. It's never really the case that I think I'm going to queue up a song after this podcast and then have another podcast. So I quite like that approach. I would just like to see the podcast app iterated on even more. I do like it now. I didn't like it years ago, but it still has some way to go.
I think you at least some of the podcasts that I listen to, you can't do subscriptions. So I don't know why, if that's like a thing that people need to turn on. But like subscriptions don't show up on my Spotify podcasts, the ones that I listen to, but they are there on Apple. So it's very strange.
Yeah, well, Apple has its own subscriptions program.
So maybe that's why they were in it. Well, I knew that, but I thought maybe they would. Are they not, like, does Spotify not have a subscriptions program that they would, you know, you would think if someone's got subscripted content, subscriptioned content available for those people who would want to sign up, they would have that across all platforms, so that you're maximizing your revenue there.
I mean, I will also say that the market share of Spotify podcasts is way smaller. Apple Podcasts,
which I'm surprised, because so many people listen to Spotify and yes. use Spotify.
And that's even the case in Europe as well, which is very surprising, where Spotify is really dominant, mm-hmm. way more than in North America. So it's strange, but I guess it simply is because people associate Spotify with music, and then when they want to listen to a podcast, they go to their app library or whatever, and they see the little purple icon, and they know that that is where they go for their podcasts. And I also think people get kind of angry with Spotify when Spotify keeps sending them emails about podcasts or suggestions about podcasts. They think, I don't want to listen to a podcast. I'm in Spotify because I want to listen to music.
Yeah. See, the only reason why, I've said this many times. For my car, I have the Spotify app. That's where I was listening to podcasts. I don't want to use Bluetooth in my car at all if I can help it. Like, I am very anti-Bluetooth at this point in my life. Any car that I have in the future, I do not want to have to control the music from my phone. I think it's just safer to use the infotainment system of your car. If the apps are integrated from that because it has a data plan, that is the best route, in my opinion. But now Tesla did get Apple Music and Apple Podcasts as an app, so I could switch. One of the biggest things, though, they don't have subscriptions live on that yet. So if you had subscription, you can't listen to it on the podcast app. For some, I don't understand the engineering, man, sometimes. It's just, why is that the one thing you can't do? What changes out of that?
That will come.
I don't understand.
Because it's in Apple's interest sure. for that to come. Because they've been making a big sure. push with podcast subscriptions.
Yeah, but like, why is it, why can I listen? What's the fundamental, what is the code difference, the UI difference? What has to change in there for Tesla to be able to enable that? I feel like, you know, as a non-developer doing the things that non-developers do, where they're like, it can't be that hard. I feel like it can't be that hard to make that subscription content work. Like, you already got the rest of the stuff to work in the app. How hard is it to make another episode that's not available to everyone be available to those who are logged into that account? Like, I don't understand. It should be by account basis, but, you know, maybe somebody will email us. I love when we get emails about stuff from the show, and we get a lot more of them, so keep doing it. It's great. I just get people being, you know, constantly emailing us with stuff that are like, hey, you asked why, and this is why. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you for doing that for us. We recently got another one of those. I don't know that I fully read it, though. Lastly, in iOS 17.5, there was something else, right?
There were two other things. One of them was references to new iPads, of course.
Okay, yes.
And this is referring to the fact that they will have the battery cycle and health features that came to the iPhone 15 lineup last year. So
cool.
We had the ability to cap charge at 80%. We also got much more detailed information about cycles, etc. But this is only on the iPhone 15. So it's interesting that it looks like future iPads, hopefully not too far in the future, will also have those capabilities.
Sweet.
And
sounds great.
The other one was third-party tracker alerts. So it looks like now, because Apple and Google have collaborated, there will be much more sort of robust capabilities for detecting unwanted tracking. And also, interestingly, you can now disable a tracker. So if you found an AirTag traveling with you or a device like that, even something like AirPods, you can now, in iOS, actually tap on that notification and request that item to stop tracking, Before, say with like an AirTag, you would have to have taken the battery out. But if you don't perhaps know where the AirTag is in your car or whatever, that isn't particularly useful because you may have only just got the notification. So good features. I hope I never have to use them. But obviously, this has been a controversial thing with AirTags. So it's good to see that Apple is working with Google to make that also work on Android, other platforms, and also to work with trackers that are not AirTags. Because actually, when I have received these notifications, it has very rarely been about AirTags. It's been about my own AirPods.
That's annoying.
You know, other people's AirPods. So it's not always just AirTags. And I suppose as Google's equivalent products and other third-party trackers also become more prevalent, it's really good to have some sort of cross-platform frameworks in place to just make this a consistent experience. You know, it really wasn't fantastic when AirTags launched and Android users could really not do anything to know if they were being tracked by an AirTag. So yeah, I'm pretty happy to see that. It's not something I hope to use, as I say, but it's a fairly good 0.5 update. I'm not sure we could really ask for too much more, considering that all eyes are obviously set on iOS 18, which is not that far away at this point. It is far away in terms of public launch, but 8 weeks from now, we'll pretty much have a good idea of what we're getting with iOS 18.
Yeah. Sounds great. I can't wait for WWDC and all that. I'm just so pumped. Obviously, iPads first, please. But then ready for all the new software features and little things that I hopefully will use and not say that I love and then never use it.
Here's a question for you.
Oh boy.
We also had a report today about how the obviously the iPads have been delayed. That much seems obvious, but we've actually had a report that this actually is an intentional manufacturing delay, and that they have been repeatedly postponed. So it's the actual target launch date for these has slipped several times, apparently. And we kind of got that picture from rumors, but it's interesting that this is now coming out, that this is actually this is something that has actually happened and that Apple did intend to launch them earlier. Do you think that if we get into May, which is now when we are expecting them, and we get into maybe mid-May, is there even any point in Apple dropping these iPads in a press release 2 or 3 weeks before WWDC? Because if they release these in a press release, and then by the time they actually launch, we're going to be a couple of weeks away. So I wonder if Apple is actually just going to just wait for WWDC, unless it really picks up with manufacturing. Because I think less than a month is probably not worth it.
I'm actually begging for them to wait until WWDC at this point. I think, I know we want new stuff, but at this point, I think that would make that event far more interesting as well, having some hardware, especially hardware that we've been waiting for a while. The thing is, I don't know when Apple starts shooting content for WWDC. I'd imagine they probably haven't started yet, right? They can probably knock it all out in like a couple of days, is my guess. Maybe it only takes one day. I think they normally
do it about 4 to 6 weeks before the event.
So, yeah. I mean, they'll have to make that decision soon on whether or not they're going to make the launch.
I also think that, if I remember rightly, it is a software issue. And I don't know why. I think that part of it is related to they've needed more time to engineer software for the new iPads. So when I hear the word software, you know, I'm a simple person. I think software, I think WWDC. So
yeah, sure.
Maybe.
No, I think I said this last week. At this point, you might as well just wait till WWDC and just have some hardware there. Because, like, they don't have to do hardware at WWDC, but it's always better when they do.
And it has happened. We like to see it.
Yeah, and it has happened the last few years. And so, like, we don't really know what that could be this year, but that could be an option then. And maybe some new Macs.
I think the only hardware that we could get would be a new Mac Studio. But I have started to become skeptical about whether we will actually receive that. Now, we did last year. We did the year before that. But given some of the rumors about what we are expecting from the M3 Ultra, I'm no longer sure that will be the case, because it looks like the M3 Ultra may be a completely new chip. So as opposed to previous years when the Ultra chip has been effectively two Max chips connected via Ultra Fusion, it looks like the M3 Max does not have the Ultra Fusion. So you could not connect them to create an M3 Ultra, which suggests that M3 Ultra is going to be a completely different chip. And we've also had a report that the M3 Ultra may be based on a newer fabrication process that Apple is not currently using. So it would be what TSMC calls N3E. So it's the E is for enhanced. And currently Apple is using N3B, which is like the base version of that process. Yeah. This is all quite technical. But it suggests that the chip that could be in the new Mac Studio will actually be a completely new thing. And as a result, it would be a little bit soon for that to show that off at WWDC. So maybe that is something for the fall, especially if we are expecting other chips based on that enhanced manufacturing process, things like the A18 in the iPhone 16. So in my mind, this is pure speculation, but I am thinking that the Mac Studio is going to now come later in the year and perhaps not at WWDC. So no other hardware that I am aware of, at least, is on the table, other than now these iPads, maybe.
Yeah, I would like some hardware for sure at WWDC, and I think these iPads make sense at this point. Also, I'm being selfish because the report was what, early May, and my thought is, oh, okay, Friday. It's gonna be Friday the 10th, and only you and I really know what's going on that time frame. So it's not, but it's not a good week for me.
Yeah.
So don't do that. It's not a good week for any of us here. Don't do that. Don't. Yeah.
Maybe we've had a reverse leak, and we've had a leak from Mac Rumors, and this is Apple's little revenge on us.
Yeah, right. they're gonna get us. Anyways, we don't really have to talk about this too much. Maybe we'll save it for when it actually launches. But the Beats Solo 4s, is this the first time that they've updated the Solo lineup since 2016?
I don't know. It's been a
while. The Beats Solo 3 has been, I think that was, if we have not gotten a new Beats Solo since the 3s, right? That was 2016. So.
Yeah, this is very overdue in that case.
So there's been some reference in code about the Solo 4s, and then a massive update came out this week saying that, like, yep, going to happen. Here's all the information. Here's what it looks like, I guess. And all of the features, and it looks like it's going to be a really good headphone or a pair of headphones for $199. If it does in fact keep that rumored price point, got to get USB-C. It's just like kind of hard to recommend.
Yeah, going but it still keeps the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, so you get your lossless audio if you want it, and then other features like Find By as well. And also we are expecting actually new audio hardware, which isn't always a given, especially with Beats. So that is good to see as well. So I think it sounds like a great upgrade.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know that it's going to sound as good as AirPods Max per se, but like given the feature set and the price point, really hard for me. And if like you want to stay in the Apple, like get that all the benefits of AirPods, really hard for me to recommend the AirPods Max when you can just get... Yeah, they're not quite the same in terms of design and quality, and they're obviously not fully over-ear. But, again, they should sound good enough, if not really good, to those who don't really care that much. And they'll have all of these features that even high-end AirPods Max do not have. So, or at the very least, they'll have USB-C that the AirPods Max don't have. So, if you're a big USB-C fan... there you go. So we'll talk about that more. We'll do a deeper dive once they're officially announced. That's pretty much it for me. Do you got anything that you want to tell anyone? Anything off your chest?
Anything other than to leave us a delightful review on Apple Podcasts?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know that I could tell you don't review if it's not going to be delightful, but I think it needs to be delightful as our personal request. So cool. Yeah. Well, we'll catch everybody in the next episode. Have a great weekend, everyone.